With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lie awake wondering if things could have been much different. Second chance.
Hey, friends. Today's guest is Andy Jackson, lead vocalist and rhythm guitarist for the Auburn, Alabama rock band Hot Rod Circuit. Together, we break down the writing, recording, and inspiration behind the fan-favorite song, The Pharmacist, taken from their 2002 album, Sorry About Tomorrow. Andy was very forthcoming with the inspiration behind the lyrics. I've been listening to this as a love song forever, and it wasn't until Andy told me the song's meaning that I fully understood the levity of these words. They're heavy, relatable, and heartbreaking all rolled into one. We discussed recording engineer Brian McTernan, and how Brian let the band be themselves, even going as far as letting Andy record his vocals alone, as Andy felt he could pull a better performance out of himself without others being around. And it paid off. The vocals are amazing, and the harmonies, well, for an analog recording, they are spot on. Oh, and Less Than Jake shares the same booking agent as Hot Rod Circuit, and Andy regaled a couple of funny stories about him. So for all this and a whole lot more, don't touch that dial.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast.
Andy, my man, how we doing?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm good. We were kind of talking off the record here a second ago about the last time we saw each other. And has it been almost 20 years?
Probably around there. Yeah. I mean, I know we did that, like the last actual tour or thing we did together was that Good Charlotte.
Honda Civic Tour.
Newfound Glory Honda Civic Tour. Yeah.
You got it. You got it.
You guys did part. And then I want to say MXPX did another part.
They did.
Something like that. We had a lot of fun with you guys, after parties. I remember dance parties we had in your dressing room quite a few times. I still talk about those. It was just fun because you guys would set up like a PA and, you know, disco ball and shit. It was just like no one else has ever done that. I always loved that.
Yeah, we had a really good time. You know, we had known the Newfound guys forever. They were like our baby band from Florida.
Yeah.
So, you know, they all of a sudden blew up, and them and Good Charlotte. And when we got asked to do that tour, it was really cool for us. You know, we had been a band for 10 years, but, you know,
yeah.
How do you till the soil, so to speak, get new fans? You got to get in front of new people. And this
exactly.
was a whole MTV audience. And that tour alone bought us probably another 5 years, you know, of having new fans
yeah.
come out. It was really good.
Likewise. Yeah. I mean, because you were playing in front of a totally different crowd, you know, than what we were used to.
For sure. Well, for everyone listening, you guys released your first record, If I Knew Now What I Knew Then, in September of 99. You were playing all over the New England area, as well as two with Get Up Kids, At the Drive-In, and Jazz June. Your next record, If It's Cool With You, It's Cool With Me, came out in September of 2000. And I understand you guys are going to be doing some Northeast dates soon. We're going to be playing that record in its entirety with my producer, Chris. Punchline's going to be joining you, and they'll be playing the whole Action album. So that's really cool.
That is cool. I love those guys. They used to play shows with them all the time. I guess, is Corey still in the band?
Yes.
Yep. Love that dude. I have a weird memory of staying at his place and somebody spilling like wine or something on his carpet. And he was like really fucking nice about it. Like, whereas I just would have been totally pissed off. But he was always a sweet dude. Love those guys.
Well, I'm going to spill wine on his carpet next time I'm at his place.
Yeah,
see what
exactly.
happens. Roll the dice. Well, you know, it was around this time you guys were starting to make noise. And in fall of 2001, you signed to Vagrant Records, and your third record, Sorry About Tomorrow, was released on March 12, 2002. And the song we're going to talk about today, The Pharmacist, was track number one on the 11-song album. And let me tell you how far I nerded out in this. Okay, I went down the rabbit hole of our Honda Civic
Pacific tour.
Yeah.
And this would have been April 27th, 2003, from Loudonville, New York at Siena College. You guys played 5 songs. I think you only got like 20 minutes to open, right?
Yeah, 25 minutes? It was kind of almost like we just hung out and played 5 songs and then hung out all day. It's kind of weird.
And the set list was High Tech Lip Gloss. The Pharmacist was number 2 in the set. Radiation Suit, Radio Song, and you finished the set with a Week Warm. So that
that's insane. You have the set list for the show. That's crazy.
I had to go find it, but just great memories with you guys. It was, you know, and it was that particular tour we were on that you guys were promoting this record, Sorry yep. About Tomorrow, which that's was right. engineered and mixed by Brian McTernan. His credits include Hot Water Music, Senses Fail, Snapcase, and a bunch of other great bands. I gotta ask, was this song with this record, The Pharmacist, was it cut to Pro Tools or tape?
We recorded the whole record to tape.
Whole thing to tape, okay.
No tuning, no beat detective. It was all tracked at his studio. And then I know in the end it was dumped to Pro Tools for mixing, but that's okay. He hadn't really gotten to Pro Tools yet. It was his first, I think it's the first record he dumped into Pro Tools to mix.
Well, I mean, the choruses and the parts that repeat, that doesn't sound copy and pasted. However, man, the harmonies are really locked here. I was trying to find spots where I'm like, it almost sounds in spots where it is copy and pasted. That's how good some of the harmonies lined up on these choruses.
That's Jay Russell, man, my bass player. I always kind of joked that he was my Richie Sambora. Like, I could sing something and he always just knows what to sing or make it better. I don't even know how to explain it.
No, it's so good. And that's the only reason I asked. I'm like, mate, you know, were they flying vocals around? Maybe they recorded everything analog to tape, but did they do vocals and stuff in Pro Tools where they could start moving parts around?
No, my vocal track, I think that was my first time really getting on the engineering kind of producer side of things as well. We had a lot more time to make the record. Brian was an old friend. He went to college with Mike, our drummer. They had history together. So that's how we knew him in the first place. He was someone that every time we went through DC, we'd stay at his house with his family and stuff like that. But funny enough, and you've probably heard these stories about Brian McTernan, when we got there, he kind of like, I don't want you drinking milk. I don't want you smoking pot. I don't want you doing this. You know,
and all I never heard any of that.
Oh,
what?
You never heard these? Oh man, there's some wild ones.
That wouldn't have worked well with my band.
No, it wouldn't have. And it was like, you know, Hot Water recorded with him too. So there was some issues there. But so I tried his way. We really did. And we had a moment where I went into the studio to start tracking some vocals and he was like, I don't know what's going on, but you don't sound like you. And I was like, man, I don't mean to sound like, you know, like an asshole or dumb, but I was like, I smoke weed all the time. I was like, I write the songs, I perform that way. I was like, so if I'm not in that state of mind or that comfortable.
For sure. Yeah.
And he was like, I've never said this in my entire life. Go smoke some weed. And I came back in and it was like one take. He was like, okay. And I was like, I have another suggestion too. I was like, I feel like I already have these songs worked out. I was like, why don't you guys go to a movie, go do that. I'll just stay in here and track them myself. You come back, check them out. So I ended up tracking all the vocals myself for the whole record.
Wow.
That way. He liked it. He thought it was cool. He liked the vibe. Wasn't a whole lot changed. So yeah, I tracked that by myself. He just set me up in the control room.
That's wild. From what I understand, and I've never met Brian. If I had, it was in passing years ago. But from the bands I've talked to, you know, he was basically an engineer and a mixer then. He didn't really produce. Now, his productions over the years, I mean, he's gotten really, really good. At this time, he was still going to tape. It sounds like he was still letting the bands kind of be themselves. Hey, you're going to come in. He's not changing choruses and parts around or really getting into the lyrics and the nuts and bolts.
And he spent, he came to a lot of shows. He spent time getting familiar with the songs before we ever even got there. He knew every song we were going to be tracking, had even like picked certain songs. So, but I would say for the most part, he just let us do our thing. I brought in like at the time, you know, I had like 2 Marshall 810 cabinets and like all this stuff. And he was like, what the hell? But anything we wanted to try, he was up for it, you know, and we ended up using those and a bunch of stuff, using a bunch of stuff that he'd never used before.
What is it? Well, first of all, take us back. Do you remember writing The Pharmacist?
I do. Yeah. This is a weird one to request because it's, you know, obviously the one song that if you know Hot Rod Circuit, you know this song.
Why is that? Why is this the one? You guys got some great songs. I love this song. But
yeah,
you...
I think we have way better songs. Like, that's probably one of my least favorite songs. But I, you know, I understand why people like it.
Yeah.
It captured the essence of kind of everything that we sound like, I guess, in one song, possibly. Because it had that little bit of pop punk, that little bit of the indie emo flavor we had going on. But I feel like we definitely had some, you know, way more obscure songs and way more polished, you know, poppier songs that could have been bigger for sure. It was just a song that Rich from Vagrant was like, man, that song's it, you know? So when he said it, of course we were like, whatever, you know, like we're going to go with this. It was the first time somebody was going to push for us.
Well, there was there's an honesty to this song. I'll talk about that in a second when we get to verse one. There's something honest about it. It's pure. It doesn't sound manufactured. It has elements, like you said, of all the styles I think you guys have had. There's dissonant parts, you know, like in the second verse, you get into that weird guitar that comes in, and there's still had this pop shreen around it. At the same time, it wasn't recorded like a pop record.
No,
you
not
know,
at all.
It's still got a little rough edges around it.
Definitely. And the song, like, itself, it's weird. It's like it's one of those, you know, I know you've been in a band for years and you have those moments where people are like, man, this song really got me through my relationship, or those kind of things, and people relate it to a relationship with a girl. It has nothing to do with a girl. It's about one of my best friends. I won't say his name just because he has passed, and I don't want to—
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I don't want to put any bad juju out there, you know, if
sure,
you will, but
sure.
I respect his family. I still loved him and respected him. But the gist of the storyline is that he was a buddy of mine I grew up with. He was probably the first person I knew that was just a true passionate music lover, turned me on to all kind of bands. I mean, back then it would have been like his stuff was a lot of like the Ramones and the Hootie Gurros and the Dead Milkmen, stuff like that. So he turned me on to like more of the punk rock side of things, and like Buffalo Tom, Fudge, the Archers of Loaf. So he was definitely, I credit him to be, you know, he turned me on to the music that got me into the place I am, like where I think about music.
And is this when you were in Auburn, or, and are you still in Auburn?
So I'm in Birmingham, Alabama. I've been here for about 14 years now. But, so I was actually in Montgomery. This is in Montgomery, Alabama at the time, a little below Auburn, about 45 minutes. And he was just my bud. We ended up playing in bands together as kids. And then, you know, Hot Rod becomes a band, moves away. Our friendship kind of, you know, dissolved as you get older. He went off to college, worked at a radio station, and to Key, the pharmacist, his job, he worked for a pharmacy, and he delivered the drugs, and he had a problem where he was stealing some of them, you know, at one point. So that was kind of like a name we called him, if you will.
Right.
Later on in life, he hit me up and was like, man, I see you're doing this stuff with your band. I've always wanted to get out on the road. So we hired him to come out on the road, and he went out, did a good job, and then we ended up staying with some people in Virginia, and this is family that they had like a bunch of girls. It was kind of weird, honestly, because it was like this mom would come and all of her daughters would say, "We want you guys to come stay at our house."
Yeah,
and
a bunch of stinky dudes in a van. Like,
yeah, you want a bunch of rock band to come hang out with your daughters? You know, and they were like fetus and stuff.
Sure.
Well, I got a call about a day after we left, and she was like, "Hey, we're missing some medications." And you know, I'm looking at my band. None of my band was into that kind of stuff at all.
Yeah.
So nor would they ever do anything like that.
Sure.
So we knew it wasn't them and confronted him. It ended up being him, sent him home. And that's why it gets a little sensitive to me, but he went home, went on a downhill and overdosed. So, so when you hear, you know, took the drugs from our friends, whatever were you thinking, you know, like all the, it's a very honest song.
Man,
so
yeah.
When you hear the honesty in it, it's a true story. It's not
wow,
it's not fabricated.
this completely hits me different now.
Yeah, and it will. Yeah.
I mean, that's the beauty of lyrics and why I love doing this podcast so much. I've been, I guess the word would be fooled so many times. I was certain yeah. I knew what a lyric was about, or this was a love song. A lot of songs like this are disguised as love songs. And then you find out what they're about, and just, I'm just like tripped out by it. Like, I got goosebumps right now just from your description, and I can't wait to get in these lyrics.
Yeah, man, do it.
The song is 2 minutes and 37 seconds. The Pharmacist, right off the top. Who needs an intro, Andy? We don't need a stinking intro.
No.
a single guitar is riffing on some chords straight up the middle of the mix along with the lead vocal. This is the first thing I wrote in my notes, really. This part sounds super honest. It's just a dude with one guitar, one voice.
That's it.
You're singing, and you know, I'd like to make a case, even though it's the same chord progression. I'm going to read it all as a verse.
Okay.
But when we get to the line, "Stayed in touch, stood behind," those lyrics there, they repeat again in verse two. So it's almost like a pre-chorus, but it's really interesting. I'm going to consider it all a verse here.
Lie awake, wondering if things could have been much different. Second chance, what's become of a friendship? If you can call this one, stayed in touch, stood behind. Well, I gave you space and you invade mine. Well, everyone.
Lie awake wondering if things could have been much different. Second chance, what's become of a friendship if you can call this one? And here's the part I was referencing. Stayed in touch, stood behind. While I gave you space and you invade mine. Well.
Yeah, so it's just, stayed in touch, stood behind. You know, it's like our friendship. I always honored it, cherished it, no matter what he was going through. I was always there for him. I gave you space and you invade mine. I gave him time to get through his stuff and then gave him an opportunity to come out and do something that he wanted to do. And, you know, with that opportunity, he, you know, destroyed it, basically. So it's, you know, it's very straightforward, which is, listening and hearing you read it and like trying to break it down like this, I've never really done that. So saying it like that, this is probably one of the most direct songs I've ever written, which is kind of weird because I feel like a lot of stuff I do has a vagueness to it, I guess, if that makes any sense. But like, it's very cut and dry. Like, it's kind of weird hearing.
Well, it is cut and dry having you explain it. But again, when we get to the chorus, I mean, this reads like it could be a love song. Like, you were hurt.
Yeah, no, it does. It does, because I was hurt, and it was a valued friendship, somebody I cared about and loved. You know.
Absolutely. Well, chorus one hits right off this verse. 19 seconds. We're already at chorus one. Drums, bass, and stereo guitars hit hard right on the downbeat with the vocals. And is that another guitar in the center playing a little three-noter counter melody? Is that an overdub?
Yes, it's an overdub. Yeah, I was starting to think about it as you said it. Yeah, it is a little overdub.
It sounds like it. It's maybe just panned a little left to center. And the drums start the chorus halftime for the first two bars.
Everyone makes mistakes. You let me down for the last time.
I love this one, by the way, how you're breaking this down. It's awesome.
Cool. I'm glad. Yeah. I always tell the guests, I do all the heavy lifting. You just gotta talk about what you remember, which I'm fascinated. People remember what they do. This is going back 20 years. So
no, it is. It is.
Good for you. There is a harmony on every line here. And the lyrics are, everyone makes mistakes. You let me down for the last time. Truth prevails and there's nothing you can hide. And I wash my hands of you, getting on with my life. I'm getting on with my life. I'm getting on with my life. On the first getting on with my life, the drums go halftime for two bars leading into what I'm calling post-chorus one. And that's the I'm getting on with my life part. And I'll get to those in a second. But what's going on here lyrically?
So it's you'll wash my hands of you, getting on with my life. It's just talking about how, you know, you've given someone this opportunity, you've given them this time, this trust, and they've broken it time and time again, and it's time to move on and cut ties with that person. It's funny to kind of say that. Every time I hear the word cut ties, I think of this. I know you're familiar with Andrew Ellis, our agent.
Oh. He's our agent.
yeah, that's right. Duh. One time we were in, I'm sure you know, me and Ellis are we're very close. Like a lot of people like call him like my dad. But we went on this long car ride from San Francisco to San Diego. We stayed with some friends of his.
You were trapped in a car with Ellis from San Francisco to San Diego?
I've done some weird stuff with Ellis. He called me one time and was like, "Hey, I'm flying to," this was years ago. He's like, "I'm flying to Birmingham." And he's like, "Can you come pick me up?" He wanted me to drive him to Jackson, Mississippi. I drove him to this pizza place to see Anna Thalo and, oh my God, who did we go see the other night? Manchester Orchestra.
Okay.
30 people at a pizza place. That's who was there. And that's when he picked them up. So I've been with him through a lot of stuff, but what I was talking about is we were on this drive trapped for, that many hours with Ellis. And he's like over in his phone the whole time, just like scrolling through it and deleting stuff. And I was like, "What the hell are you doing?" He's like, every once in a while, I just go through my contacts and just delete people I don't want to talk to anymore. He's like, "You just got to clean it out." He's like, "I don't want to deal with that person anymore. There's no sense in having their number." And I was just like, I've never heard anyone think that way or act that way.
He had a lot of hours to eliminate stress between SF and San Diego.
Yes.
Again, I want to talk about these harmonies. They're great. Yeah. And when I go
get off topic, I do that. I'm ADHD.
That's not off topic at all. It's very, very pertinent to this story. It really is. But the harmonies are great here. I compared them. I A-beat them to the other choruses, and they're tight.
Awesome.
They sound really good. Again, the drums go halftime for two bars leading into the post-chorus one, I'm calling it. And that's just those two lines I'm getting on with my life. But the reason I separated that from the chorus, this whole part changes. The whole color here and everything, the vocal harmonies and note choices here are killer. Life,
awesome.
both times is really held out. You're doing these wavy like harmonies. The drums get a bit subtle here with a closed hi-hat. This part to me serves as a come down to gently ease us back into verse two, because it's just, when the chorus hits, it's just so big.
Yeah.
This part kind of settles us back down. The bass guitar is great here, and there's a clean arpeggiated guitar right up the center in this post-chorus part before we get to verse two. Do you remember how this came about? That's a really interesting come down there. It only happens once in the song.
Yeah, Hot Rod was really weird about doing some stuff like that. Even because recently, like going back, learning some of these songs some of these songs I haven't played and I couldn't tell you how long. Dude, I don't even know what I fucking played,
Well, it's so weird.
Like,
you go back
one headphone to hear my guitar over Casey's kind of thing.
A lot of times I go back and I'm like, I can't believe we wrote that bridge. Like we cut it right there. Like, what were we thinking? It's like, well, that's how the fans know it. You got to play it like that.
Well, I've noticed we had a lot of one parts or like a two bar part that like when I hear it, I'm like, God, that could have just been a great song, but it was like, we just played it for 3 seconds, but I feel like we did that a lot. Like now that I like going back and listening to a lot of stuff,
you know what? I've often thought about, do I want to waste this killer part on just a bridge
for
16 bars? And at the end of the day, we've had songs where the bridge is the pinnacle. It is the best part of the song. And it makes people want to rewind it and re-listen to it again.
Oh, I'm a huge bridge guy. Like that's one of my favorite things. So,
Well, one of my favorite parts of this song is the bridge. We're going to get to here in a little bit, but again, verse two is killer. We get right into it right out of this post chorus, and the drums, bass, and a single guitar panned slight left is playing single note little riffs, and also sounds like either another guitar Andy is feeding back, or if I'm hearing that off the main guitar I was just talking about, that riff, like the gains on a pedal is too hot. I'm hearing some feedback in here.
Yeah, so Casey loved to do some like underlined feedback tracks a lot of times. He would do a lot of stuff like that. I mean, it would just be him with like some pedals, literally with his guitar up against the cab, just making these like ominous tones and then just kind of bury that understuff. He did that a lot, actually.
That might have been what's there then. I might be hearing two things. I didn't know if it's like when you would stop playing a note and the guitar would just like hold for a second, you get a squeal out of that pedal, you know?
And we do, we are playing most of that whole record's in drop D, which is kind of weird when you hear our music. You don't think of our music as a drop D kind of band.
Right.
But the way we play it and do it, it just gives you that extra low end on the top. So sometimes you're getting a little bit, a weird thing about me is when I was a child, I crushed the bone in my finger. That joint doesn't bend. It's straight.
That's your middle finger on your left hand.
Yeah, exactly. So at a point I was told I'd never play guitar again. And that's when I started tuning to the D style, which in turn I play a lot of like a C chord. I don't really play standard. G, I don't play standard. It has a lot of open notes to it. And I think that's where a lot of people, when they try to like cover Hot Rod songs, it never really sounds right. Cause there's a lot of janky notes in there, if you will. It's just kind of making it ambient kind of sounding.
I had a buddy of mine was drinking, being stupid about 20 years ago, fell off a 2-story roof, crushed his wrist.
And
he had to relearn how to play guitar, and everything was drop D after that.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
I know that's.
I mean,
that's
I can
horrible.
Play anything now. It's like after years of playing, but it's for a long time that I really couldn't even use that finger.
Wanna call and catch up, but no matter. From my friends, whatever were you thinking? Stayed in touch, stood behind while I gave you space and you and made mine. Well, everyone
wanna call and catch up, but no matter what I know, you still suck. Took the drugs from my friends, whatever were you thinking? Stayed in touch, stood behind while I gave you space and you invade mine. Well, and again, I'll make a case that's kind of like a pre-chorus.
It is.
Sets a chorus too perfectly. So yeah, what's happening here?
What's that first line again? Tell me the line of my own song.
Well, yeah, you gotta play this song soon, man. You're going on tour. Want to call and catch up.
Catch up. Yeah. So that's like hitting the part where it's like, you know, like I said, we had a deep friendship. I still to this day owe a lot of credit to my, the love I have for music to this guy. So I found myself often, you know, wanting to check up on him, wanting to see what he was up to. But I knew at this point in my life and everything I'd been through with him, I knew that it, you know, those ties had to be cut, you know, but I often thought about him.
How many times do you want to bang your head against the wall? You love somebody, but you yeah. can't make them love themselves.
There's nothing you can do. You know, even going to his family is really supportive. I think close people are, you know, they obviously knew, you know, who it was. Even going to the funeral, it was kind of weird. There was like some outsider friends that were kind of like, I don't know, like maybe looking at me weird, thinking that like it was mean of me to write that song. Or maybe I was just in my head thinking that. But I did have some weird moments when I was there. But he is definitely somebody that like I found myself thinking about a lot. Wondering if I made the right decision, did I make things worse? Because you start blaming yourself sometimes for things like that when you really care about people.
Well, and sometimes the worst place you can take someone you care about that's struggling with this kind of thing is on the road.
We have
one of the few jobs you can walk in and tell your coworker, hey, I need to smoke some weed, otherwise this isn't going to happen.
Yeah, it's like you just walk into the club and like, hey, we're looking for weed. And it's like five dudes jump out, you know? So yeah, it's not where you need to be.
Right, especially if he was going through what he was going through.
Right, and that's where like I say some of the responsibility I feel. It was like, you know, I took a chance, but at the same time, I feel like I should have known better.
Hey everybody, don't go anywhere. We got lots more with Andy Jackson coming right up after a few words from our sponsors.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass to Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come baby come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast. And now, back to the show.
Here's one thing I gotta know. We get a double chorus here. However, there's one lyric difference. The very start of the chorus, everyone makes mistakes. That's the last time we hear that lyric.
Yep.
That's really interesting to me.
I never thought about that.
Yeah, it doesn't come in the second half of chorus two, and when we get to chorus three later, it's not there either on either time.
Never even thought about that.
Yeah. So, and I'm wondering, it's interesting. It's almost like you're still forgiving him up to chorus two. Everyone makes mistakes, but in chorus three, it's like, no, you let me down for the last time. I'm not giving you the mistake anymore.
I've never thought about it that way, but I mean, now that you say it that way, it does come across that way.
Well, I never thought about it either until you told me what the song's about.
Now,
I'm kind of putting my own pieces together, whether it's correct or not.
Now that you know what the song's about, do you still like it?
Yeah, I really like it.
I just didn't know, like, if you had a different perspective on it.
No, I probably like it more because of, again, the honesty. You know, you can't fake that. Your fans know when you're BSing them.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Mine, well, everyone makes mistakes. You let me down for the last time to the bells. Yeah, there's nothing you can hide, and I wash my hands of you. I'm getting all of my life.
Everyone makes mistakes. You let me down for the last time. Truth prevails, and there's nothing you can hide. And I wash my hands of you, getting on with my life. And we don't get an everyone makes mistakes again. It just repeats with you let me down for the last time, repeats all the way to getting on with my life. Harmonies, again, on everything. They line up very similar to chorus one. That noodly guitar from verse two carries over here into chorus two for the first two bars before morphing into that three-note guitar riff from chorus one. It kind of morphs back into that part. Same basic instrumentation here in chorus two as chorus one, but it's a double chorus with a slight fake out, I'm calling it, because before the second half, we don't get the lyric, everyone makes mistakes. Otherwise, same lyrics on the getting on with my life the second time. The drums do not go halftime there. Before we get in to the post-chorus number two, and this couldn't be any more different than post-chorus number one.
Completely different.
Completely different part. Again, I know Brian McTernan wasn't really giving producer tips at this point. Hey, why is that part that way? Why isn't it this way? Was there ever any thought of, hey, we should repeat that first post-chorus, or we want to do something different here?
I think for a lot of, I'd say 90% of the writing. I usually write a song, have the most of the lyrics, but there's a lot of hot rod songs where it was just like, I just had a riff and we just start playing. And then Jay starts on the bass, like all of a sudden, boom, going off here, and then we follow him. And then Casey goes over here. We had this weird way of like, kind of just, oh shit, what are you doing? Okay, let me try that out. There was no like rhyme or reason. We didn't say, hey, this is this or this is this. It was just about what felt good. I think that was always the biggest thing about Hot Rod. We just kind of, Casey's a very noisy guitar player that noodles the whole time. It's like, and some people don't understand that, but the bands that we loved, and my favorite band is the Archers of Loaf, and so is Casey's. Yeah. Like, that's why we became a band. We wanted to be the Archers of Loaf, as far as. Which is kind of funny now, like looking back on it, because it's like, not to say that, when people are like, why was your band much bigger? And it was just like, well, we were trying to be the Archers of Loaf.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like, we weren't trying to be Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, we were trying to be Superchunk. Who?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
No, that's funny when you think of it that way. And it's always, you know, I'm careful when I use those terms. Like, I think your band should have been bigger. You don't know if that's going to trigger someone and make them feel like crap.
Yeah. I wish my band was bigger too, but that wasn't really our goal. I don't think even as where we were as musicians, I don't think in my mind I ever thought we'd ever even like make money doing this and have fans. I'm like still blown away by this, every day. So
you found yourself in an arena with us at some point. Yeah. Like how'd that happen? I pinch myself all the time. It's pretty crazy. Well, post-chorus two, you just get one I'm getting on with my life. The lead vocal goes up an octave here. You can really, it's super powerful. You can really feel this part. The drums are halftime here. Lots of tension. This is like 10 bars, this section. So it's like the bridge starts on bar 10. It's really weird. Like when you're listening to it, you almost feel like it's going to start earlier. And like
it is a weird feel.
It is. It provides this tension.
Yeah, it does. It does. It's a weird setup. I don't know how that happened, or it's just like some of the things that happened were just like accidents.
Well, like I said, couldn't be any more different than post-chorus one. An octave guitar joins the party. The first four bars, the band is rocking a halftime groove on bars 5 and 6. The drums pick back up on bars 7 and 8. A tom shuffle beat happens. And on bar 9, the drums pick back up and the bridge starts on bar 10. And the I got to ask you here, these bridge lyrics are really poignant and kind of to the point. Yeah. You repeat them twice. And I think that they meant so much that you wanted to repeat them twice. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, I just kind of wanted to drive it in.
That's what I take from it. We get harmonies on everything here in the bridge. It repeats twice. The harmony on the word difference both times. It's killer. That high harmony on that word.
That's Jay Russell, man.
It's it's awesome. It sounds like you're in unison and there's a couple harmony outshoots in here. Like not everything's perfectly harmonized. And I love that too. That makes it to me sound real. Sometimes when everything is perfectly harmonized, especially when you're tuning it, now it sounds like a children's nursery rhyme.
Yeah,
it
just sounds like a keyboard and not vocals anymore.
Yeah, but this is breathing here. The lyric, it repeats twice. I'm going to read it once. And the shit remains the same, and there's no difference in this stupid world we know. And you say that again. It's a 16-bar bridge. The band is rocking away. Another octave guitar joins in here on bar 7 and 8. The drums go to that tom shuffle again before picking up for the back half. On the second half of the bridge, that octave guitar kind of morphs back into that three-noter, reminiscent of the chorus. On the last two bars, the drums go back to the tom shuffle to launch chorus 3. And again, these lyrics, that got to talk to you about this last line, in this stupid world we know. Is that you saying that? Is that you saying that for him? That's an interesting lyric now that I read it.
I think it's more me saying it to him. It's just like how stuff like that can just be so stupid and shitty. And it's just like, man, life could be so much different, if you just made some different choices. And it's like, I'm all for doing whatever, if recreational, but like when it starts, taking away from your life and people other ways around you, it's obviously there's something wrong. I'm not a big like drinker or anything. I drink occasionally and smoke, but I'm not against people doing things. It's just, I think it's the excess is where we get lose people.
Well, that and when you're letting your friends down from the standpoint of leaving a trusted family's house, they trusted you in their home and you're stealing their medication. I mean, there's a line we don't cross as humans. I mean,
exactly. And as, I mean, shit, those are like, it's also like the, you know, like the laws of the road, man. You respect, you know, if somebody's inviting you to their home, you're going to respect their home and make sure they leave. Everything's there when you leave, you know, like there's just certain things. You're building a brand and you're trying to build a name for yourself, not like go around stealing from fucking people. So,
yeah. And if, you know, out of all the years I've been doing this, I'd like to say most of the people have been genuine and caring and you know, like I didn't run with many guys. If I did run with the guys that were stealing, it was in the very early days and we broke ties with them. You didn't want to hang out with people like that.
Exactly.
Just a bummer. Well, right off of the bridge, Andy, we get into a double chorus. And again, I'm going to bring it up. We don't get everyone makes mistakes here.
No.
You know, it's almost like you threw your hands up and said, I'm not going to say that again. That's your out.
Yeah.
Everyone makes mistakes. I'm drawing the line. You let me down for the last time. Truth prevails. There's nothing you can hide. And I wash my hands of you getting on with my life. And you repeat that lyric again. Harmony is on everything.
You let me down for the last time. Truth prevails. And there's nothing you can hide. And I wash my hands of you.
You know, people talk about boundaries. We have to have healthy boundaries in our life.
Yeah.
But sometimes that is really difficult to do. You know, I have children now. I can't imagine my kids being addicted to something or in trouble. You're going to want to be there for them. But at some point, here you said it, I have to wash my hands with you because
you
otherwise I can't get on with my life.
Yeah, you can't. And you can't do things. You can't do things for people. I mean, you can do things out of kindness, but you can't enable people either. Or, you know, it's like if you're always constantly doing things for them and, you know, they're never going to learn anything. So, I mean, especially having kids, you gotta let them make mistakes.
Well, very, very rarely do I have to go back and I don't know if it's correct my notes or say that this part is invalid anymore, but I wrote, it's interesting. There's no everyone makes mistakes lyric here again. Odd and interesting, I wrote. And now it's not odd and interesting. It's not, because I know what the song's about.
It fits the story now.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Awesome.
Prior to talking to you about it, I wouldn't have put that together. Again, double chorus here. On the back half, we get a high-pitched lead guitar. Kind of comes in center, adds another layer to that three-noter part, this real high guitar. Do you remember that? Like how that came about?
I don't remember. I think that was more of a Casey thing. I think I really do. I think that was more just like a Aftermath kind of thing that came in. I'm going to give that one to Casey.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah. On the very last line of the song, getting on with my life, on my, the band stops briefly. You get a couple hi-hat counts before a cool little drum fill and the whole band ends simultaneously. And the guitar is kind of fades
That's
out.
It.
You know, going back now, geez, 22 years almost. What do you think of the track now? I mean, I know you talked about it a little bit, you know, at the top, you said, hey, this isn't one of my favorite Hot Rod Circuit tracks, but we can never guess what the fans are going to like. I've never been able to predict it.
Right, dude, it blows my mind. I mean, things that I thought people would like, they hated, you know, it's kind of weird. Or now they like it 20 years later. Now they get it. Mm-hmm. You know, we have one record, the Reality's Coming Through. It just never really did anything. And like, people come up to me all the time now and are like, dude, that record's amazing. And I'm just like, mm-hmm. Well, you didn't buy it.
Well, I'll tell you what's happened with my band. You're probably gonna be able to relate to this.
Yeah.
You know, when we started, we were 5, 6, 7 years older than our fans. Our fans were 14, 15 years old, right?
Yep.
And we kept going. And when we were getting into our first divorces and people dying in our lives and, you know, marriages and things that happen, parents dying, these kids hadn't experienced yet. We started writing about this stuff. And it wasn't until 5-10 years later, they're holding these records now that they
right.
no one liked, or it seems like no one liked. Now they're saying this is your best stuff because it finally caught up with them. And
they understand it now.
Yeah. It's funny how that happens.
It is weird. And I was the oldest guy in our band too. I'm 49 now. I'm not sure how old you are, but
I'm 50.
Okay. So we're right there. I can definitely relate to all of that. One thing I did want to say before we go, cause you brought up Superchunk and it correlates to about what you were saying about how you don't know what lyrics are sometimes.
Right.
It's just a funny little side story. We did a tour with them and the Get Up Kids.
Oh, wow.
Mac, the singer, lost his voice. And they called me and were like, "Hey, we still want to play the show tomorrow night. Would you sing for Superchunk?" I was like, "Yes, I'll do it." And I was like thinking in my mind, I know every fucking word or whatever. We went out for sound check. I started singing. They're like, "What are you singing?" And I had them write the lyrics out on poster boards for me.
Oh,
I didn't know 90% of the lyrics like that. Everything I was reading, it was hard because I was reading stuff like, I don't know what the fuck this is. Like,
yeah.
And then, you know, when I went back and listened, I'm like, dude, I've literally been listening to this record for 20 years and I thought I knew all the lyrics and I did not. So there's another side of that too, where it's just like, you kind of just hear what you want to sometimes.
Did you pull it off? Did you get through the show?
I pulled it off. I did about half the set. Jay did a couple of songs and Matt Pryor from the Get Up Kids did a couple of songs. It turned out to be great. It was awesome.
That's cool. And I'm sure the fans loved it. I always, we've had to do that before. I've lost my voice and the opening bands will come up and sing. We just tell the crowd, hey, it's either we packed up and left and you guys are angry, or we stand up here like idiots and sound like crap and maybe you'll have fun.
Come up and jam. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, you guys have released a couple more records. You just mentioned in 2004, Reality's Coming Through. And in the spring of 2007, you released The Underground Is a Dying Breed. And that was the last record you released. You got that tour coming up in about a week with Punchline. And
That
looks like it's going to be killer.
Super excited. I can't wait.
Before we break, anything else you'd like to leave the fans with? Any new music coming up from Hot Rod Circuit?
So we did the re-release of If It's Cool on vinyl. We did it with our own imprint. We started Versatility Records, which is a title of a Hot Rod song. So we wanted, now that we have that access to kind of do things more in-house, we are planning. We've been working. I've got tons of songs. I mean, like, catalog after catalog of songs. I've been writing a lot lately. The plan is for us to get together a few days before this tour. We're going to try to rehearse and track a few things. And over the next 6-8 months, some people will be, I live pretty close to Nashville and our mic's in Nashville now. So we'll be doing some back and forth stuff. So we're planning on things. We're just trying to do it on our own. So it's a little slower. Without, you know, having label money, it's all out of our pocket and things like that. So
awesome, man. Well, hey, best of luck. Always loved you guys and love to do some shows and hope to see you down the road.
Likewise, let's do some shows. Let's write some songs together, man. Let's do it.
Listen to the radio with my friends. Sitting on the left side. Listen to the radio with my friends. Sitting on the right side.
Hey, everybody, I hope you all enjoyed that conversation with Andy Jackson. And if you're listening to this episode the week it comes out in January of 2024 and you're in Connecticut, Massachusetts, New York City, or Philly, come on out to the show. Hot Rod Circuit is playing their album, If It's Cool With You, It's Cool With Me. And my band, Punchline, is playing our Action album. These shows are going to be insanely good, so come on out. I know there are ticket links to all the shows on punchlion.com. And don't go anywhere. We got lots more Chris to Makes a Podcast coming right up after a few words from our sponsors.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freights from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective. The only podcast you crank up to 11.
end of the show. Here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, email your best song and a short bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured artist is Who Am I, a self-described two-piece power duo from Greenville, South Carolina, featuring Andrew Hoorie on guitar and vocals and Dr. Love Beats on the drums. You can find their music on all the streaming platforms. Here's a snippet of their song, Things We Would Do.
You can expect me around 5 or 5:30, and I don't care if you're still dirty for work. Oh, the things we would do. Oh, the things we would do. The things we would do. Oh, the things we would do.
The Wrap with Chris and Chris.
Chris, this was a really exciting one for me. My friends and I hold Hot Rod Circuit in very high regard, much the way that we hold Less Than Jake in high regard, two of, you know, the people I roll with's favorite bands. And I was very excited to have Andy on this episode. And I cannot believe that The Pharmacist is not a breakup love song. That blew my mind. All these years, 20 years of loving this song, I can't believe that that's not what it is.
And me too. And it, you know, if you look though at verse two, took the drugs from my friends. I mean, there's stuff in here that just didn't jump out of the paper at me until Andy started describing it, you know?
Well, that line in particular, I thought that meant I'm so upset that I'm taking the drugs from my friends yeah. to deal with it. That's what I always thought that meant. Not this person who's on tour with us took the drugs from our friends that we're staying with out of their medicine cabinet. I would have never thought in a million years that's what that meant.
No, and you know, and he shows this gracious humility at the end too by saying, well, do you still like the song? Now you know what it's about. It's like, I think I like it even better.
I like it even better now.
Yeah.
I would argue that most of us can relate to that subject matter just as much as we can relate to it if it was a breakup song, right?
Oh, yeah.
We've all been through these situations at this point.
We have. And you know, maybe not to the degree of this fellow, but I've let people down. I've had people let me down. People I
sure.
never thought would, you know, and family members, you know, sometimes close family members. And, you know, you at the end of the day, we're all human. We all err. But at some point, like Andy referenced in the chorus, it's like, you know, I wash my hands of you, getting on with my life. I have to. That lyric still is so interesting to me now, how he left out everyone makes mistakes in the back half of the choruses. He just didn't repeat that again because it's like, no, I've given you enough chances. You don't get any more rope.
Right. I'm really surprised that he said this isn't one of his favorites, but I mean, Hot Rod Circuit has a ton of awesome songs. Like I told him, their song, The Power of the Vitamins, is probably like a top 20 or 30 song. If I ranked every song ever in my life, it's up there. So I get that. I was surprised to hear that this wasn't one of his personal favorites, but I know people absolutely love this song. I thought it was pretty wild that Andy tracked his own vocals while working with Brian McTernan. He's like, oh, I'll handle this. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, I think that, you know, some people take it a case-by-case situation. Here, Brian, yeah, said whatever works. If you have to go smoke to do your vocals, go do it. Hey,
right.
If you want me to go leave and go to the movies and have you do your own vocals, I'll do that if that's what it takes. You know, if I was working on a project cutting vocals with somebody, I probably wouldn't do that. That's just me. But hey, whatever gets the job done. And it seems to me like the job was perfectly executed here with the vocals.
I never heard any of that stuff, just like you didn't, about Brian McTernan. I didn't know that he was like, don't smoke, don't drink milk, don't drink milk. I was like, I didn't know if he meant because he was like a vegan or something,
well,
or if that meant, or because it makes your voice all, you know, you're not supposed to do dairy when you're singing or something. I didn't know what that was all about.
I don't know if it's for that reason or if it's because of his convictions. I do know that he used to sing for hardcore bands. So, you know, the hardcore
right.
scene was a lot of straight edge vegan and whatnot. So maybe it stems from that. Of course, he, you know, recorded Snapcase and a lot of different hardcore bands as well. But yeah, that was really interesting. But again, his vocal sounds great here. And I guess that was a good move.
Yeah, there's a lot of charm in the recordings of Hot Rod Circuit 2. Andy's voice is awesome. Casey's guitar playing is so recognizable and unique. That's something about Hot Rod Circuit that always stood out to me. And more than anything, their songwriting. You know, they're right up my alley of like this mix of like indie rock, but with such pop sensibility. They're easily one of my favorite bands from our world of music, which is why, Chris, I'm so excited that next week we're going out and playing some shows with them. I've been so psyched about this. I love, you know, a lot of times we tour with great bands, and sometimes if I'm not that familiar with the band, I become a bigger fan, but this is a situation where I'm going into it like as a huge fan of the band, so I'm pretty psyched.
Yeah, and it was great to see him today and catch up. I hadn't seen him. Gosh, we think it's been about 20 years, but we had an absolute blast, less than Jake did touring with Hot Rod Circuit back in the day. So awesome, and where's the first show? Do you know where the first one is you guys playing?
I do. So on January 25th, if you're listening to this the week it comes out and these shows haven't happened yet, January 25th is at the Space Ballroom in Hamden, Connecticut. January 26th is at the Sinclair in Cambridge, Massachusetts. January 27th is at LPR in New York City. And January 28th is at the Foundry at the Fillmore in Philly. You know, I know tickets, we're recording this a few weeks before, tickets were going pretty fast, but there might be still some tickets available, so check that out. Punchlion.com, I know, is our site where you could find ticket links, or you can just Google it. Most people know how to find tickets online these days.
Love it. And hey, do us a favor and go head over to ChrisToMakes.com, and you can sign up for our supporting cast where you get bonus episodes from Chris and I. Yes, we'll talk at you more. We'll entertain you even more. ChrisToMakes.com. Go over there and sign up and help support this podcast that we hope you know and love. We think you know and love, right, Chris?
I would assume that if you made it to this point of the podcast where Chris and I are plugging our shows and our supporting cast, that you like our show. And for that, I say thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. And to each and every one of you listening each week, thank you to each and every one of you too, because without you, we wouldn't be doing this. And we really mean that. What else? Oh, give Chris Fathalius a follow on Instagram, and give me a follow on Instagram as well. I'm at Less Than Chris D. We also have a Chris Makes a Podcast Instagram page now. Chris is putting up a ton of great content over there. Go check it out. I'm still doing custom songs, Chris.
I just started
the machine back up again for 2024. If you want a custom song, jingle for your business, something for that special someone or someone you don't like, maybe your boss, I'll write a song for you. Hit me up, chrisdemakes@gmail.com for info. And I want to thank this week's guest, Andy Jackson from Hot Rod Circuit, for sitting in the hot seat. And we'll see you next week.
Hey everybody, Satan here. I know what you're thinking. Jesus Christ, Satan has a podcast now too? No, that's not it. But I am here to tell you about a podcast, and it's one that's all about my favorite band, Punchline. Not the band you expected me to say, right? You probably figured I'd like Slayer, or maybe some backwards Beatles records or something. Those are okay. But you usually find me rocking out to fan-favorite Punchline albums like Action or Lion while I'm torturing dead people for all of eternity. Punchline's podcast is called A Band Called Punchline, and it's super entertaining to listen to this documentary-style look back at the 25 years of my favorite band. Honestly, I'm really feeling like I'm getting to know these guys, and their story is amazing. I'm so ready for them to get down here. I have so many questions. I gotta give them credit for catching on to my whole 37 thing, too. There's a reason why they're my favorite band, and if you listen to their podcast, they might become yours, too. A Band Called Punchline is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Check it out, and I'll see you all in hell.
Lucky Land Casino. Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey there, I am Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.